Phaedra Crusoe, Chief Customer Office at the General Services Administration. Pleasure to meet you, and thank you very much for your time today. You're almost a year into the job. What are the primary responsibilities of the first ever CCO at GSA?
It's a great question. So when I came onto the job, Dan Tangerlini brought me on to test a hypothesis that an empowered, dedicated customer team could actually make a difference at GSA in the way our customers perceive our products and our services, just like it had in the private sector. And I think we're well on the way to proving that. So my first responsibility was to understand what was broken here. Many people coming into the job warned me that it could be culture, right? So that's the classic thing people say about government. And I found actually that it was exactly the opposite. So that you had a very customer-centric workforce here at GSA that really cared about the customer, but actually lacked information about the customer. So day-to-day information. They weren't empowered to make data-driven decisions around the customer on a daily basis. So in the first 6 months, we set up a small dedicated team, and we worked basically on collecting data, doing customer journey maps, doing hundreds and hundreds of interviews of customers across our five customer groups here at GSA, just to get a baseline understanding of who our customer is, defining those user personas, and what their journey at GSA looks like, and where the points we could, where were the points that we could improve that journey. That was the first 6 months, and that went really beautifully. And I think everyone at GSA is now familiar with what a customer journey map looks like. We have them on the walls and things like that. And in the second half of the year, we've been focusing on action planning. So once you have that information in your hands, like, how do you break it down to actually make day-to-day decisions around it? And that's been going very well as well. One great example is the tenant satisfaction survey. So before we came on board, we had every 2 years we get information about the tenants through a survey that sampled a percentage of tenants. We took that, took it online. It was paper-based as well. We took that online and had it cover 100% of tenants across all of our public buildings, and then took that information and put it into the hands of building managers within a month. They were able to action plan against it, and they were actually able to see improvements in tenant satisfaction from 1 year to the next. So it's a nice example of how just putting the right information in people's hands can make all the difference.
What is a customer journey map, and what do you do? The survey example is great with what you how you turn that information around. What's the customer journey map concept?
So the customer journey map is when you provide open-ended interviews with customers, they can tell you about their experience with GSA. We did this with hundreds of contracting officers across government buying off of our schedule, for example, and buying off of our BPAs. And we started to understand that what we see as the journey of our customer is actually much shorter than the actual journey. So we think it starts when from the moment they stumble onto Schedule 70 and they start to use it, and we think it ends right after they award a contract. When we talked to our customers, we realized that they needed help before stumbling onto Schedule 70, and they needed help after they awarded. And adding that kind of value add at the beginning and the end of their journey can make all the difference to their experience with GSA. So that's a classic example of how you can take information that maybe a survey won't show you, but open-ended interviews and mapping that out against a timeline can show you that, like, you're missing parts of the puzzle because someone still feels like you owe them more help, right?
So the common thread here is asking questions of people to find out what their lives really look like.
Yes.
CEOs are one example of that.
Yes, novel example. But yes, I think it's something that we have to do more. And I think we've proven it even in technology where we do human-centered design research, that asking the customer is never a bad thing, and we just need to get that information in faster and interpret it faster so we can act on it.
You mentioned that there was already a spirit of customer service, a desire to serve customers when you got here. Besides the data pieces that you're giving people, what else are you giving them? What other resources will they have now that they didn't have before in order to be able to fulfill that part of the mission?
Well, they have our small team also acts as a SWAT team of sorts. We can come into your team, augment your work, project manage it, help you walk through some design thinking techniques, almost like an innovation lab that goes out to you rather than you coming into them. So what we've done is once you do identify a customer problem that you feel is too hairy to tackle or that you just don't have the bandwidth to tackle, our team can come in and augment your team and make sure that and help you think through it in kind of modern design thinking ways and so that you can get to the answer faster. So I think that's been really helpful. Because our team is small and because we do this kind of adopt hand back approach with problems, we end up accidentally almost training people in design thinking as we go into every engagement. So that's been wonderful because it's cascaded across the agency.
The tenant satisfaction survey, the customer journey map, those are the kinds of things that it sounds to me like are driving, for example, the customer journey map is what's driving the changes in Schedule 70 that
yes.
you have Kay Ely in charge of.
Absolutely.
Am I on the right
yes.
track there?
Yes. So Schedule 70 specifically, we actually tracked potential contractors coming onto the government, potential vendors that wanted to come into Schedule 70 for the first time. And we asked them to BCC us on emails with GSA and to do a weekly kind of diary entry on how their experience was going. And we were able to do a really detailed map across several potential vendors and more to come on what their experience was like, which was wonderful because Kay, of course, is very excited to make this a wonderful experience. And so she took that map and was able to quickly identify two or three areas that she could tackle immediately and just make that experience a lot faster and a lot smoother and a lot better.
Do you find that when you see these inflection points, like the ones that you just talked about, do you find that they're generally solvable or that they're, as you called them earlier, big hairy problems that require a lot of time and energy and resources?
It depends, right? So a lot of them are process improvements, which sometimes can be hairier than others. Some of them are technology improvements, sometimes, you know, so those have a variety. Some of them are policy and we just can't help it. I think it really depends. It depends, definitely.
You have an expiration date, January 20th, 2017,
yes.
most likely, I
yeah.
should say,
yeah.
to be fair. You'll be finished. What do you think are the two or three most important things in your role as CCO that you want to make sure are either solidified or finished when you're finished?
That's a good question. I've been thinking about that a lot, and one of the primary things is I want to be able to create the processes to get the information from the customer into the GSA team's hands permanent. And I want to make that a continuous feedback loop and an open feedback loop. And so we're trying various ways to do that, including, for example, putting our buildings up on Yelp, right, so that it's a continuous open loop for tenants. But at the end of the day, like the best, and even in the private sector, the best chief customer officers leave, right? Because they're no longer needed if they did their job right. So 5 to 10 years down the road, I hope GSA doesn't need a chief customer officer. I hope my position disappears because we've created the feedback loops and they're permanent and people know how to take the information and do something great with them. And that really drives both the products we offer and the services we offer, as well as the type of support we give.
Will it be obvious when that's the case, though? Will somebody in your role, or you maybe, be able to step back and say, we've really hardened this process and this is now the way we do business? Or is this something that somebody in some role will have to check in every once in a while and make sure it's perpetuated itself?
I don't know yet. We do objectives and key results on a quarterly basis. That's how we kind of plan ahead, very similar to what Google does. So we've been doing that, and we do that in partnership with the administrator and the deputy administrator. And I hope that one of us has the good sense at some point to say, okay, this is done. Mm-hmm. We did it. Our scores are up. We're producing products that are widely adopted, which means we're listening to the customer's needs when we create products. And we have a really robust feedback loop and an engaged employee base that knows what to do with that data.
Yeah, my fear is I've seen in the years I've been covering the government many examples where someone does achieve something really great, it doesn't continue to get fertilized and nurtured and watered, and a couple of years later you check in and it's kind of gone to pot like the garden in my backyard.
It is hard. I feel like government's, it's my first year in government, I just finished a year, and I feel like government is one giant relay race where you're passing the baton along and like a vision to the next person over and over and over again, even the career folks, because they move around in government quite a bit as well. So I think we're just going to do our best to set a good vision and pass along a good baton and see what happens. But I hope that's not the case.
So if you go back to the private sector at the end of your tenure here, what will make you a better customer service person in whatever role you serve that you took away from GSA that you wouldn't have gotten had you not come here?
I think I underestimated the value of data in people's hands. I assume that people are talking to their customers because I came from the startup world and from a small and then medium startup company. So we talk to our customers all the time. It was live or die. If we didn't talk to our customers, we'd be eaten by a competitor in no time. So I have a really great appreciation for how big organizations, that data can get lost and that loop can get hazy. So I'm really happy to have had the experience with such a large organization and figuring out how to do this on scale.
New standards for websites all across government. 4-month collaboration.
Yes.
Who collaborated with who, and who started the idea? Where did it originate? And how did you decide the agencies that were going to help you with this effort?
It's a good question. So this is one of my favorite projects, and it just launched. So I'm so happy you asked this question. My first hat is of Chief Customer Officer. About 6 months into the role, I was asked by the administrator to take on the Office of Citizen Services, which is basically not just caring for the customers of GSA, but caring for the customers of the federal government. Mm-hmm. One of the things I did is I opened up some of our funding to people from the digital service ecosystem and told them, pitch me your ideas and tell me what you see as needed in the government, and I will support those ideas. One of those ideas, the people that voted on these ideas were members of the White House, as well as member leadership from GSA, and we had a big kind of open and very transparent pitch competition for these ideas. 8 ideas came through. The first one that ranked the highest, and that is this government-wide web standards. So in case you're not familiar with them, the government-wide web standards are open source web standards that are up on GitHub, where citizens can provide feedback that anyone in the federal government and state and local can use. They don't need to go get an expensive, design contract. They can just use these. And the added advantage of using these is that other agencies are also using them, which means that we'll create a more consistent customer experience and a more user-friendly one across a very federated federal government. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge advantage to this. And the fact that there's an open feedback loop and people are continually improving it is just an added bonus.
Digital services ecosystem. I want to come back to that term because I love that term. How will you promote this, sell the benefits of it to other agencies? Or are they seeing already that the benefits of using these standards is obvious?
The benefits are fairly obvious to those that are familiar with building digital services. So they've already been used 3 times, believe it or not, and in their very early alpha stage. One of the websites that you may know more than others is the College Scorecard. Mm-hmm. Department of Education used them. The White House also used them along with the Presidential Innovation Fellowship Program to produce vote.usa.gov. So they've been used already, which is wonderful. And so we're not going to necessarily promote them. The government is pretty bad at promoting things, internal services, in my opinion. But we have kind of an informal handshake with the United States Digital Service and the digital service teams that are popping up at every agency that they should use this first. And we've all committed to that. And I think that'll make a dramatic change in 5 to 10 years as we're redoing websites in the federal government.
You anticipated my next question, which is, as I surf all across the various government websites, which I do on an ongoing basis, when will I start to see a little more uniformity? I understand everybody. Yeah. I saw the snowflakes analogy on the website, and that's entirely accurate and fair. But when will those snowflakes maybe start to look a little more similar? It sounds like that's the time frame to look
for. I think that's time frame. We're in a very unique point in the government's history when it comes to digital services, because right now we're seeding teams across the government that are digital services specialists, and that's the ecosystem that I just spoke about. Mm-hmm. Plus, we've got a team at the White House, USGS, and we have the kind of the larger team at GSA, 18F, and these folks are refreshing government websites all across the government, and I hope that if they commit to using this, then in 5 to 10 years, we should have covered a decent majority.
So there's a cultural point there, too, that I wonder about, because for a long time, the discussion in government about websites was a website as a functional thing, just that was there to provide information, but not necessarily do anything.
Right.
That's obviously not the way that the average person uses the internet anymore.
Right.
What's that change been like culturally to get people to understand that, it's one thing to say we want federal government websites to function like Amazon and eBay and so on, and it's another thing to get people actually in the mindset of that's how we're providing services.
I think it's been an ongoing challenge, and it's something that is really important to achieve. So this digital service movement, bringing people in from the private sector, empowering people in government that have these skills to sit at the management table, doing these things have shifted the mindset from Internet 1.0 to Internet 2.0, which is more transactional. It also is much harder, right, than 1.0, because it means taking paper-based processes online. It means changing the underlying plumbing and technology behind websites. So it's a much longer and more arduous process. But I think we've got the right people in government and the right people at the leadership table now to to push this forward.
Are you finding the talent in the digital services ecosystems coming primarily from outside government, coming primarily from inside government with some outside folks sprinkled in, 50-50 mix? What does that look like?
In terms of numbers, it's definitely the people inside government being empowered. But we are bringing some very smart people to the tune of about, I think, 200 now over the last 2 years from the private sector that just can help help government folks kind of move forward faster. Mm-hmm. So the best examples I've seen have always been true partnerships between someone coming from the private sector with fresh ideas and the naivete of not knowing how the government works, mm-hmm. and paired up with someone within the government who knows exactly how the government works and how to get things done. Mm-hmm. And you put those two people together and it's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. That ecosystem is interesting to me too, because it contradicts the idea of each agency working in silos, mm-hmm. where if you are cooperating with people in the digital services team at whatever agency, fill in the blank,
right.
That's a silo that not only can get knocked down, but doesn't necessarily have to ever be built in the first place.
I believe so. I think we're building it so that it's not as siloed as it would have been traditionally. Mm-hmm. For example, the digital service leads from every agency meet every Monday evening, from what I understand, and collaborate and talk about their needs. 18F is definitely and USDS is a hub for these efforts too, because we get a lot of incoming requests, so we can see what the common needs are. We can send people out. The ecosystem definitely socially intermingles and intermingles with their work as well.
What's the result that you get from that, the benefit that you get from that? Because it sounds like that's exactly the kind of collaborative environment that every organization, public, private, whatever, really wants in 2015.
Yeah, I think the biggest benefit, and I can't stress this enough, is that we see patterns. No government agency is really a snowflake, or very few really are a snowflake. We see tremendous patterns in terms of what agencies need to build out digital services. Mm-hmm. Another great example is we have built out Federalist, which is another project that came out of that great pitch process. And this has been used several times over, including for College Scorecard, and it's a very fast way to build an open source website. This is something that every agency needs. We built it once, and we're now providing it to agencies so they can build websites faster. So I believe identifying the patterns and the commonalities between digital services and then, you know, floating that back to GSA so that we can provide that at scale has been really powerful.
So what I hear as you describe all of this, when you use terms like ecosystem and mm-hmm. all of that kind of stuff, I hear a long-term vision, an implantation of the way of doing business like this in the government infrastructure. So when I think about things like the Agile Acquisition BPA, the protest to that, rather than that being a big story, it sounds to me like in the grand scheme of things, this is kind of a bump in the road and we'll move on. We'll get past this and move on, and it won't really interfere with the long-term vision that we have.
I think absolutely, reasonable? Absolutely. It's a bump. Yes, absolutely. There's a much longer-term vision. I love to quote Todd Park has my favorite quote, which is, think of government as an industry that needs to be disrupted. And I don't want to focus on the word disrupted. I want to focus on the word industry. Mm-hmm. So because we're a federated government, it's not like we can go to one place and just turn the key and say, now everything's different. We have to, like any industry that you disrupt, you have to go at it from different angles. So I see USDS going at it from a firefighting angle. I see 18F going at it from a builder's angle. I see the Presidential Innovation Fellows as entrepreneurs in residence. Everyone has their part to play to move the government forward when it comes to digital services, to move from 1.0 to 2.0, mm-hmm. like you mentioned. And the Agile BPA is a way for us to scale those efforts. It's a way for us to engage 18F-like teams, because we can only grow so fast. Mm-hmm. And it being protested is a natural part of the ensuring that we have the right processes in place, and we're happy to just work through it and come out of the other end in, I guess, 60 days or 90 days or however long it takes.
You talked about a couple of the angles that different groups are approaching these issues from.
Right.
Are there angles that you would like to cover that you haven't gotten to yet, or that you don't see on the horizon where that angle is going to be approached from, or whatever, anything like that?
I think the angle that I'm most interested in and most passionate about is the one I think that needs the most work still, and that's how do we engage the private sector in a way that's really helpful to the government. So how do we create a really secure bridge between the private sector and the government for innovative private sector companies that we may not always have access to? So that means, how do we streamline Schedule 70? How do we repurpose and streamline FedRAMP? how do we make sure that these companies have marketplaces like the Agile BPA where they can be marketed to government and can people can access them in a curated way. Mm-hmm. So I'm really passionate about that, and I think we'll see a lot of movement in that from GSA and from 18F specifically, and Auxit that has FedRAMP over the next year. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited. I think that's the final piece to the puzzle to moving the government forward when it comes to digital services. And I think it's one of the most powerful pieces because it's really a scalable piece.
Mm-hmm. What's the talent acquisition process like for you? The government's notorious for taking a long time to respond to people and a long and convoluted process, there are a lot of people believe. That's not really conducive, it sounds like, to drawing the kinds of people that you want to draw for digital services especially. Has that turned out to actually be an issue in reality?
It's always an issue. So taking more than a couple of weeks for a really high performing talent in the private sector is an issue. Mm-hmm. And we've streamlined it internally at GSA tremendously, and I have to really give a huge shout out to our HR department for that. We have our own really streamlined recruiting process within 18F, where we, you know, do technical interviews very quickly and in a thorough way. So I think we've gotten it down to as short of a process period as we can. But that's still a month or two, and that's still difficult. Thankfully, the impact and the promise of impact to the people in the private sector is really enticing, and so it hasn't been difficult. We get flooded with CVs of people that really want to come in and make a difference, and I think that's a wonderful thing that we're seeing in the next generation, past my generation, that you know sees public service not as a career choice, but as something they do within at some point in their career.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that we ask people, like, where did you go to school? We should be asking them, where did you serve your public service? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a mentality that's emerging.
There are agencies that would kill to be able to bring in high-profile talent in a month or two. So you should feel good about that, even if it doesn't feel so good. What are some of the major projects, government-wide type projects, that 18F is working on, not just within GSA?
No, that's a great question. So we both approach government-wide kind of building block projects, and we also take on agency projects. So government-wide building block projects are things like the Web Design Standards and Federalist, which I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. as well as cloud.gov, which is a platform as a service, kind of like Heroku is for the private sector, but mm-hmm. for government. So we have several building block pieces that I think will be used by several agencies, which is wonderful and one way to scale. We also take on agency projects. So we had Every Kid in a Park, which was from the National Park Foundation that recently launched. And we also had College Choice, which was with Department of Education.
What's the role for you and your team here to work with the digital services organizations within each agency as they stand up and start to operate?
They are one of our primary customers, and probably some of the CIO shops and the digital services teams within them are our most sophisticated customers. So they know exactly what they need. They've gone in, they've assessed the problem, and usually they're small enough to assess the problem and to chart a path forward and nimble enough, but they're not so big that they can take on all the work themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we've actually seen a tremendous, every time that digital service team stands up, we actually see a tremendous increase in work come into 18F.
The Environmental Protection Agency got a leg up on everybody,
yes,
I think.
Yes, Greg.
By stealing Greg from you.
Absolutely. Greg's done a wonderful job there. He still advises 18F, and I still rely on his advice for 18F. He was a wonderful founder, and he's done a great job with EPA building his own team and working within the CIO shop, and that should be a great example for other agencies. Department of Education has also done a wonderful job. VA has done a wonderful job. There's an emerging team at DOD called Bunker 75 that's coming up. So there are... It's happening across government, and we're excited to see it happen, and we're excited to all work together and keep in touch to mm-hmm. make sure that we serve them as our customers, but we also create this ecosystem where we understand the needs and listen to them as our customer.
I want to go back to that idea of engaging the private sector. When 18F first debuted, mm-hmm. there's a lot of apprehension in the private sector. GSA did, I think, an effective job eventually of saying, listen, we're not going to be able to handle all of the work that's out there ourselves. We're going to rely on our partners in industry. What would you like to see the next two or three steps be to engage the private sector, whether it's industry that directly sells to government mm-hmm. or just some of the bigger companies or even smaller companies that have something to offer in collaboration with or in complement to what the government does, any of that?
That's a great question. I think you're absolutely right. We could never scale to meet the government's $80 billion annual IT spend. We're 150 people, which is sizable considering we're only a year and a half old, but and we're growing very quickly, but we'll never be the size that can address the whole government. And I don't think we'd want to be that size. I think we'd get a little stale if we're really quite that big. The next two or three steps are breaking down that journey that the vendor has with the government, which I see largely in three pieces. The first piece is getting onto schedule or getting onto a government-wide contract. So we're working hand-in-hand with KELE and FAS to make sure that that improves as much as we can, given the policies. The second part is working on getting that vendor secured and kind of get through this, their own version of security clearance, and that's largely FedRAMP. And we're working with the OCSIT side of the house to make sure that we work on that and streamline that. And the last part is creating curated marketplaces so that when vendors do come through all the way through the gates to the government, that they land in a place that other agencies can understand their value and can interact with them on a regular basis. And that's the marketplaces. Mm-hmm. So the Agile BPA is one example of a marketplace, but I'm hoping that we'll be launching a new marketplace every 6 months for the next couple of years that capture the big needs of the government digital services teams, like data analytics, for example.
You got ahead of me there. Yeah. I was curious what areas those markets might be in.
Yeah. Platforms as a service, definitely cybersecurity and data and analytics are things that we're considering right now and exploring right now.
You have done a wonderful job of answering just about every question on my list in one way or another. I wonder if in the time we have left, if there's anything else that you have on your plate or in the pipeline that you think people should know about.
I think I encourage people to reach out to our team, and I wonder how I can give you some contact information. We very much listen to the voice of our customer when it comes to our agency customers, and I think we're doing a great job of that and understanding what they need from digital services at GSA. We are working on getting that voice of the private sector. So I'm doing roundtable discussions and some tours with private sector companies and startups and trying to understand what prevents them from entering government, what they find difficult, where we can improve their journey, and what we can do once they're in to make sure that it's successful. And I'd like to continue that. There's an RFI that went out from FAS, like asking vendors just that information. So I'll try and get you that information. But we'd like to hear from the private sector. This is an area that we are actively trying to improve on.
Phaedra, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time today.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.